Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Time Shifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher. Here in studio with me is my co-host, Matt.
Hey.
Matt, welcome back. We got some great stuff to talk about today. We've also got some not-so-great stuff to talk about. We're going to get to that in a second. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in, first of all, and just remind everybody that if they haven't already, they can subscribe to the podcast by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or just go to timeshifterspodcast.com, and you can listen to the show there. You can send us any feedback or anything by sending an email. You can type it out or record it like an MP3 or something and send it to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. And I think, our Facebook group, of course. You can go there and join the group. We've got a few new members here recently, and I welcome them. We've had some good conversations there. The last episode was pretty much entirely based on the conversations going on in the Facebook group. And then, of course, you can follow us on Twitter. We are there. At Time Shifters Pod and at Movies at the Mat. So yeah, that's all the contact information. So now we got to get into some of this news and stuff, and let's just get the not so great stuff out of the way. This just surfaced two, three days before we record
Yeah,
James Gunn has been fired from Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and all ties to Disney has been severed.
Yep.
Due to some tweets that surfaced that were. Nearly like a decade old, I think, weren't they? That's kind of part of the story here.
Ranging from 5 to 10 years old. It was a whole number of them, yeah.
Yes. And these tweets are very, distasteful. I mean, they are...
They're horrible, yeah.
They're not good.
Not making any excuses for those tweets.
No, absolutely not. And nor is he.
Right.
Other than that, he's saying, look, when I was young, he was working for Troma at the time, wasn't he?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think at the time he was at least tied in with Troma. I don't know if he was working for them like on the payroll, but he has done some work for him. So him, not Andy Kaufman.
That'd be impressive.
That would be impressive. I can't think of the Troma guy's name. It's a Kaufman though, right?
I can't remember.
But anyway, James Gunn has said that, you know, he was at the time trying to be, what was the word?
Just shock humor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really conflicted about this because I saw it and my jaw dropped. I'm a big fan of his as a director, as a writer. I've been following him on Twitter for about a year, and he's never said anything even remotely close to this. And in fact, he gets into arguments with people who do, and he kind of stands his ground about being a better person, about listening to people. So I don't really think he or anyone can play the, he was younger card, because if you go back 10 years, he was 41.
Right.
So he was an adult, but you can still be an immature adult.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep going back and forth on this of, was it justified? Was it not justified? You know, the reason it was brought up was because James Gunn's political stance got him, kind of in the crosshairs of some conservative-minded people, mm-hmm. who just wanted to take him down a peg.
Yeah, this is my biggest issue with
right.
it. Not justifying what he said,
exactly.
or any of his jokes. They're in bad humor. You know, whether they... I don't believe there are anything that he was, living out. I don't
right.
think this was his fantasies or anything. I think this was... When I read it, I read things... I don't hear anything more crazy than what I would hear if you tuned into... expect out of the mouth of someone like Howard Stern or something like that.
Right.
So I've seen lots of interviews and stuff with Howard Stern, and, you know, there's a role one plays on the radio, and maybe sometimes that bleeds over, but I don't think any of this was actually truly him. It was him trying to be funny, trying to be shocking, trying to stir up controversy just to direct people to him and what he was working on or something like that. And the fact that this is all come out and it's politically motivated. It wasn't anything that, it wasn't like the Harvey Weinstein, where it was just finally people going, no, that's enough. I'm fed up with your decades of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. It's strictly politically motivated. And I find that almost more offensive than anything.
You know, when I first saw it, I was upset. I was mad. I was thinking, how could Disney do this? But then it got other people to start talking about other things that he hasn't hurt anyone, but people saying that, you know, if you look at his work closely, there's a long history of misogynistic undertones and racist undertones. And, you know, I didn't jump into those conversations. I just wanted to hear people out, and I just kept reading what they were saying. And they have a point, but I don't feel, again, that was him doing that to hurt anyone, that maybe that the things he were saying and the things in his movies weren't him targeting anyone or trying to hurt anyone, that maybe he is a symptom of the problem and not, you know, a root of the problem. That if those undertones are in his movies, it's because it's like what I was saying with, you know, Fire and Ice, that, you know, this is a deep-seated, ingrained thing in all of our minds that we're not even aware of. So if he's putting that in his writing, in his movies, is he even aware of it? Is he aware that he's he's highlighting characters in that way?
Misogyny in film? What? Are you
exactly
crazy?
But is he doing it on purpose, or is he doing it just because that's what we're all used to?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So that's my take. And the other thing that confuses me is a couple of tweets come out, brought up for the worst reasons, instantly fired. John Lasseter still has a job with nothing but allegations brought against him. Johnny Depp, they still want to make Pirates of the Caribbean movies. It's almost proven that he was an abusive husband. He's being sued by somebody else for attacking them. They're not getting rid of him, though. But a few tweets from 5 to 10 years ago, you're out?
Yeah.
It's not so much give James Gunn his job back. It's why that and not the other?
Sure.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to talk about people's past, you know, don't anyone tell them about Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other part of, like, you know, why is it an instant firing? Why isn't it like, okay, James,
Explain yourself.
Maybe do some sensitivity training. Go on an apology tour.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we allow a person to make amends?
Yeah,
especially
it's a little bit like saying there's no sense in having a penal system. You know, if you're not going to give everyone, okay, you served your time and now, you know, you're back in society. If you're not going to give them that second chance, you might as well just not ever let them out, or just make everything a death penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's the point?
Exactly. And so I don't see why. I mean, I can get people being upset, and I can get people saying, oh, I'm done with his work. That's your choice. That's fine. That's the consequences to his action. But I just don't get why he's not even being given a shot to make this right, especially when the other people under the Disney umbrella.
Well, you think it's because it's coming right on the shirt tail of, like, the Roseanne Barr.
But she did that now, and she's always been like that. She's been doing those things here and now. He did those things years ago. Her things were directed at a specific person and group of people. His was, again, just that whole shock humor. Now, maybe I'm splitting atoms here. Mm-hmm. That's for everyone to decide. But, again, if Roseanne wants to grow from this and learn from this, maybe down the road she could be given a shot. Right now, there should be consequences for her actions. And then maybe you can even say with James Gunn, we're taking him off Guardians 3 as the director, but we're going to work with him to come back. Like, that it's just that quick, clean cut. Mm-hmm. That's what I don't get. And my hope is that he can come back from this in some form.
I think he will. I think this is because of the time frame that we're talking about, because of the circumstances that it all came to light. I think maybe it won't be Disney that he works for.
Right.
But I don't think this is not going to be their career ender or anything like that. Maybe he's going to have to take some time off.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going to let it all settle down a couple years later. Maybe he could do some indie projects or something, some personal projects.
Which he has a lot of, because he wrote the Belko experiment, which was something that he wanted to do for a while. I liked it. It ended in a way that to suggest there will be more.
Mm, okay.
He can get back on that. But I think the other thing that kind of like just bothers me as a fan is he put a lot of subtle hints and Easter eggs, and apparently there are two huge Easter eggs one in each of the first two Guardians movies that people still haven't found yet.
Okay.
That he keeps saying they're there, and when you find it, I'll confirm it. And he's like, I'm not trolling you. There's one in the first one, there's one in the second. Nobody has said anything yet. And he was building something. Somebody thinks they found it in the first one, that maybe there's a hint at Galactus.
Mm.
But all of this stuff came up, and so he's not talking about it. And he had plans for like what the world was. He had all of these little details worked out, and now that's all going to get thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just from a creative standpoint, that's kind of the bummer. And you know, we shouldn't sacrifice safety for what somebody's creating, but I don't feel anyone's safety was at risk with what he has done.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there was any danger of anyone on the set or anything.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, this is one of these things where, you know, your opinion, you have to follow your heart, you know, like you were saying. If that is the end of James Gunn for you, then that's the end of James Gunn for you. But like I said, I think he's a talented man. I think he will come back from this. We will see more work from him, maybe just not for Disney. But I guess, and then, you know, time will tell. And if circumstances like this, for good, for better or for worse, also can sometimes have a way of bringing other things to the surface. And there could be, you know, more things. You
right.
never know. It takes one person to bring something up, and then someone else goes, oh, yeah, well, he did this too. And like, and oh, that was last month. That
Right.
Yeah.
And then that
would
be
that changes the conversation.
Exactly. That's new information. And then, you know, my opinion would adjust with it.
Exactly. All right, well, we should talk about something happier. And, of course, that's definitely some of the stuff coming out of the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yep.
So as we're recording, we're actually – our schedules got a little jumbled, so we're actually recording on the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con. So we've had a lot of stuff come up just recently, a lot of new trailers and news and things like that.
Just yesterday.
just in the last couple of days. One of the first things that came out, I think it actually was tied with the San Diego, I'm not sure, but the trailer that just came out was the Titans.
Or, yeah.
Are they even calling it Teen Titans?
Just Titans.
Yeah, because it's 20-something Titans,
right.
It looks like. The trailer for that, not overly impressed with what I'm seeing. You know, there was a few leaked photos that came out. What, about a month ago?
Yeah.
A month and a half ago, something like that.
The,
and everyone kind of slammed some of the costuming that they were seeing, which I never put any stock into that kind of thing. It's kind of like, that's on the set. You don't know what's going on. It's real. Who knows, you know? So I don't care about that. But now we've seen an actual trailer. Not impressed.
Not impressed at all. And I was kind of geared up for this. And this is going to be something that's going to be on the DC streaming service. I don't know if it'll come out to anything else.
Oh, okay. I was thinking this was a like a theatrical.
No, this is going to be a show.
Oh, this is a series.
This is
I'm completely behind and lost.
Yeah. I always thought that Teen Titans would make an excellent couple of movies that, you know, in my little pipe dream brainchild of DC movies, it would have been like a bunch of heroes, individual movies, then a Justice League. And then, like, all of their follow-up movies introduce their sidekicks. And instead of a second Justice League, we do a Teen Titans. And it should be the story that talks about how, because when you think of, like, who's in the Teen Titans, you've got Robin, you've got Wally West as the Kid Flash, you've got Speedy, who is the Green Arrow's sidekick, and they all come from, like, these kind of messed up family backgrounds.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Dick Grayson, his parents were killed right in front of him. Wally West comes from an abusive household. Roy Harper grew up on the streets. Like, they're a bunch of, like, wayward orphans in a way, and this is the family that they finally have been longing for. You know, you throw in Wonder Girl, who is probably the only one that came from, like, a healthy upbringing on Themyscira, and then you throw in Aqualad, who is kind of raised to be a warrior himself in Atlantis, but they still don't know, like, true, like, family bonding love. And this is that.
Right.
And instead, Titans just showed a bunch of angsty late teens, early 20-somethings who are just punching people in the face.
Right. And it definitely looks like you're talking very deep Titans, like comic Teen Titans, with including of Speedy and Kid Flash and all that. This looks like it's pretty much piggybacking on, like, all the Teen Titans animated and Teen Titans Go, with just the main four characters of Robin, Beast Boy, Raven, Starfire, and I thought I saw a Cyborg in there.
I don't know if Cyborg's going to be in there since he's in the Justice League.
I was wondering, but there was a clip of something that looked like a Cyborg. So either that's...
Maybe that was a villain. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
I only watched it once. I was so bothered by it. And, you know, it looked cheap.
Mm.
The whole thing looked cheap. I kept watching it going, this looks like a fan trailer.
Yeah.
Robin's costume looked good. Starfire looks like they went to a thrift store and just picked a bunch of stuff up. Raven was just all, you know, second-rate CGI. Beast Boy looked like they had just painted the green on him that day.
And it was a glimpse of, just a glimpse of him, too.
Yeah.
I was mostly Robin, Starfire, Raven, and then you got a glimpse of Beast Boy. And like I said, I thought you see like a glimpse, like silhouette of Cyborg. And
yeah, and that's not the group I would do. I would do what the ones I said. I would do a movie that shows Robin, Kid Flash, Speedy, Aqualad, and Wonder Girl coming together, and then halfway into the movie, you know, these five who come from kind of like, you know, not ideal background, you know, family backgrounds with the exception of Wonder Girl, they meet Raven, who comes from the most messed up background because her dad's a demon from another dimension. She finds family too. And so that movie ends with the six of them joining up. And then, you know, I always had this part in my head where Raven is like, so am I part of the team? And then Robin goes, no, you're part of the family.
Oh, very good.
Roll credits.
I like that.
That's the movie in my head. And that's just not what I'm seeing. That's not what this trailer showed. And if people want to be like, oh, well, you don't know what the show's going to be like. Well, that's the point of the trailer. Let me know what the show is like. And all I saw was just angry 21-year-olds, you know, screaming at the camera because they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. DC does not have a strong...
They do shows well, and this is a show,
I suppose, yeah.
But it's not Greg Berlanti, at least as far as I know. And he's the one that's been kind of like, you know, the hive mind keeping everything straight and figuring it all out. But yeah, this just looks like it was made on a budget of $12.
Yeah, all right. Should we stick in the DC universe? Because we had another trailer come out just the other day.
Well, there are a lot of trailers.
Yeah.
Let's see. The trailers that I saw, there was... I didn't watch it yet, actually. There was a second trailer for Venom. There was the second trailer...
Oh, I haven't seen the second trailer for Venom.
Yeah. The second trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Titans. Shazam, Aquaman, and Godzilla.
Right.
Where do you want to start?
Well, like I said, sticking with the DC universe here, I guess we got to stick with Aquaman and Shazam.
Okay.
Shazam, you seem to like it more than I did.
I did like it because I know what you said, that it has a bit more of like a Green Lantern
it
look to it.
It feels just like going back to Green Lantern.
Got a Spider-Man Homecoming vibe from it.
I did not.
Of a kid who's like, wait, I can do this now? Like, that's what I saw. Two things that I would change from the trailer is his little light bright lightning bolt. That's
figured out they could do that with black lightning, and so now, you know, that's the thing.
But like, I don't get why Captain Marvel's suit has a light in it. Like, just give me that, you know, he's this ancient power. Just give me like this nice old Egyptian cloak kind of thing that would just, you know, this just
looks
good.
The lightning bolt would look better if it looked like more of like the embroidered or like they were doing like the Superman where his outfit is nothing but like the S's all over, you know, it's that subtle pattern. Just do that lightning bolt with little lightning made out of lightning bolt kind of pattern.
I thought that would look good. I'm not really into that whole, like, it's glowing so brightly, you're seeing it reflect off his face. Like,
right.
It's too much. The other thing is it doesn't really seem to show that Billy Batson is any way separated from Captain Marvel.
Yeah, see, that's where you're talking about Spider-Man Homecoming, and I'm thinking, yeah, but isn't it Captain Marvel, aren't they really two separate entities?
Not, yes and no, it's more of Captain Marvel is Billy Batson with the wisdom of Solomon. So it's more of they are two versions of the same person, where they are separate, but they're still one and the same. It's really hard to understand.
Okay.
But the thing that always like really solidified it for me was in the series Injustice, where it's like this what-if scenario, another world that's almost identical to the main DC universe where Superman becomes a dictator. Captain Marvel starts to wonder, like, am I on the right side here? Because it's all happening slowly and subtly where Superman's taking over the world. And so he doesn't know what to do. He's like, I'm going to other heroes for advice. I'm going to other adults for advice. I have the wisdom of Solomon. Maybe I need the innocence of a child. And then he yells Shazam. And then Billy's standing there and Billy's like, what do you want? And they keep going back and forth and having this conversation about what the right thing is.
Mm.
And that proved to me Billy and Captain Marvel are separate, but they're both there at the same time.
Interesting. All right. I have to admit that my Captain Marvel knowledge is limited to like 70s TV shows.
Wasn't great.
No, I've never read any of the comics or anything like that. So my knowledge of Captain Marvel is, but I understood it as he's a boy, he yells Shazam, and he becomes, you know, the world's mightiest mortal.
Yes.
And I always assume they're two separate people or two separate entities kind of thing. Not the little boy in a big boy pack, in a big man package.
Right. It's somewhere in between that where it's more of like they have, like, you don't know where the line is for where Billy stops and Captain Marvel starts. Like, it's really blurred. There's a lot of overlap where they're both separate, but they're still the same person. And that's one of the complexities that I like. And maybe that's too complex for the casual moviegoer to understand. Right. So they were just like, just make it a kid in a superhero.
I was really hopeful in the first few moments of the trailer because you got, you know, I liked how they kind of built it. He's, you know, he's a rough life. He's in the foster care system and everything. I was like, okay, I'm with you. And then suddenly, you know, I choose you. You know, he gets pulled into some mysterious cave. And I'm like, okay, still going. And he walks in and you see the... what looks like, again, it feels like the old 70s show. You're in this big chamber with all these, with these chair, you know, the big chairs. Like, oh, they're really doing the whole, what was
the
it?
Council.
Solomon, Hercules,
Atlas.
Ares, Atlas, whatever it was. Yeah, Zeus. All these, you know, gods of mythology or whatever that are going to grant him his power. And now it's just one guy that says, say my name. What? What?
And I wonder...
It, and that's where it loses me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But I also wonder if that has to do with what they set up in Wonder Woman, where they said, like, oh, the gods are gone.
Mm.
You know, they all died.
Oh, man.
Maybe Shazam is the last... You know, he's not even a god. He's just a wizard that, you know, holds the power. So, yeah, maybe that'll come to light of, like, oh, yeah, I'm passing it on to you because I, you know, I'm too old. I can't hold it anymore. And if it doesn't go anywhere, it just, it fades away because they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
They could do that. Who knows? Because, yeah, that movie set that up.
Yeah, and there was definitely a couple scenes that I really liked. Just moments. So you see him, Billy Batson, just walking and Shazam,
boom,
slam.
That's my favorite part.
That right there was, if they had just shown that, I would have sold me.
That's it. That's the whole trailer.
But unfortunately, they went on.
Yeah, that was the best part. I do like the humor. I do, you know, somebody pointed out, it's amazing how we're going from Justice League and then it shows the part of just Captain Marvel just like dancing and like to that.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I'm on board with that.
Everyone was talking about how dour and dark DC is. Well,
right.
Here you go. Here's Shazam, folks.
Exactly. And even
I think maybe the pendulum is swinging too far the other way.
And so it's just a matter of, is the story going to be good? Is it going to be, you know, as fun as it looks? And, you know, is it going to not have a bunch of plot holes, and is it going to be true to the character? And again, not a lot of people have that much knowledge of Captain Marvel that the baggage won't even be there. So you're going to go in and just be like, oh, I don't really know much about this guy, so I'm on board for whatever story you're about to tell me. More than any other movie that DC has put out, this is the one I'm probably hopeful for.
Wow.
I've said that before.
Yeah, interesting.
So I actually see it, I will not say that they've corrected course yet.
All right. Well, we shall see. I guess being that they're going to try to, assuming they're going to keep it in the same universe as everything else, you do wonder how Captain Marvel would fit with the rest of the DC Universe films.
Well, I heard a rumor that they're
being
doing
such a big change of tone.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
And the rumor I heard was that they're going to kind of go back to basics a little bit, and that you're going to see at the end of these different movies of Superman showing up and just being like, we need to talk.
Mm.
And he's collecting more heroes, and that they want Superman to be the face of the DC Universe. They planned on it being Batman.
And kind of should.
Right. But it's not working with Batman. So they're just sort of like going all in with Henry Cavill. And so if that happens at the end of the movie, that could be kind of cool.
Yeah. Just take a break for some of this news just to mention, you know, I've been taking the Time Shifter moniker to heart, and I finally went back and watched Justice League and Batman v Superman.
Sorry.
In reverse order, by the way.
Oh, so it just, okay, yeah.
I finally wanted to watch Justice League. I'm like, man, I really should have seen Batman v Superman first.
Mm.
And I definitely agree with a lot of people. It came up with our discussion about an unpopular movie opinion or whatever. Ben Affleck does a great job.
He does.
They write Batman so horribly, though.
Yes.
His Batman character is so miswritten in those two films. It's almost, that's what makes it unwatchable.
Right. But his acting with they wrote is wonderful.
Yeah, he's really good. It's like, okay, this guy needs a legitimate Batman film.
Yes.
Not this stupid, I don't know what they were thinking with him with, I'm going to do right by Superman. No, what?
Exactly.
where the hell did that come from?
Exactly.
That shouldn't be there. So I just wanted to throw that out there just because that tied in perfect. Batman should not be the, you know.
The face.
It should not be the face of the DC universe. Absolutely not.
He's the one who should be grudgingly like joining the Justice League of like, I'll help you when you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going back to Gotham. Leave me alone. Yeah. That's Batman.
Why aren't the writers of the animated series being tapped to write these films?
I don't think Paul Dini's working. I mean, at least not to the point that he can't drop what he's doing. Like, to me, he's the guy that can write Batman better than any person ever. And just give him all of the Batman projects and we'll never complain again.
Just take that three-part Justice League animated story, the premiere. Just string it together, fill in a couple gaps here so it blends into whatever. Throw that in the theater.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah. All right, Aquaman, you mentioned it. Surprising. I didn't know that the trailer was going to be coming out. I guess that's the whole point of San Diego Comic-Con.
Yep.
What do you think of Aquaman? It looked...
it was there.
It was there, yeah. It just seemed like it was like, it's an Aquaman film.
Yeah.
And it does kind of everything you sort of would expect.
Right. I think the thing that got me the most geeked up was seeing Black Manta. Because I didn't know he was going to be in it. Or
I've
at least
rumors.
You're right. I didn't know he was going to be in it, or at least not in full costume doing like a fight sequence. When I saw that, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
We're going there. All right. So that was the one part that got me excited. The rest, I was just sort of like, you look nice.
Mm-hmm.
Looks wonderful. The only thing that gives me faith in this is James Wan. I think James Wan's an amazing director. Mm. He's the one that came in and saved the Fast and the Furious franchise. James Wan is the one I wished was put in charge of Justice League. The guy knows how to deal with an ensemble. He knows how to take all these personalities and give everyone their moment and make everyone feel like they're important and make you learn something and take you on a journey. You know, the Justice League should come together as a group of people who don't necessarily want to work, but then they find out they are stronger together, and James Wan is the one to do that. It's not Zack Snyder. It's not Joss Whedon. It's this guy. So can we please put him in charge of Justice League 2?
Well, we shall see. Maybe it'll happen. We'll see if Aquaman does okay, you know.
I'm hoping it does okay. I'm hoping it does really well. The thing is, I don't really look at Jason Momoa as a leading man. I look at him as a great supporting character. He'd be fine in a Justice League. I don't know if he can carry his own movie, so I'm hoping that all of those other stars around him build him up.
Yeah. Yeah, I may agree with that. Maybe only because I'd only seen him as the supporting actor.
Right.
I've seen him on television series. I've seen him, you know, show up in the film. Didn't he do the Conan?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I heard was not great. Not great.
But who wanted to see a Conan movie anyway?
Yeah. I wasn't really jonesing for that anyway. But so I've only seen him in like the supporting roles, and I thought he kind of does fine as that, you know, the dark, brooding, you know, tough guy. And that's always what I've had him pegged at. So yeah, having him front and center through the whole film is going to be different.
Yeah, and a lot of people I follow on Twitter who were at Comic-Con when they revealed that trailer was their trailer went longer. And had a lot more exclusive footage. And they were like, and it's better. It's way better. They were like, I know what you're saying about the trailer. This was better. Like, they showed us, like, clips. And, yeah. And that's the other part that I find interesting is, you know, even just last year, Comic-Con, they'd reveal a trailer. And they'd be like, well, we're not putting it online. They've put everything online. Oh, yeah, it was in Hall H. You've got it now.
They've learned their lesson.
Right. And I think that's really funny of, you know, okay, we can't confiscate all the things. It's going to happen.
Nope.
So, there, you know, we'll give you some exclusive stuff here, but then we'll, you know, still put the trailer out there. And yeah, that's kind of funny to me.
Yep. I'm glad they learned their lesson because it was getting, you know, they were getting really upset that all this, you know, exclusive stuff was coming out. It's like, really, what do you expect?
Right.
It's going to happen. Just stop fighting it. Just
control it and put it out.
It's going to air at Hall H at 1 p.m. Well, at 1:05 p.m., put it on YouTube.
Exactly.
That's where it's going to be if you don't. Yes, another trailer, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, coming out in 2019, which, another year to go, because I think it's May of 2019, so not quite a year, almost a year.
Just pull out the calendar. Godzilla, circle, X, X, we're getting closer.
I liked what I saw. I really liked what I saw. I think they did everything right. They did everything sort of just little hints and bits and show silhouettes and not a lot of, and here's this big monster. It's like, nope, just in the shadows or frozen in the ice and behind the light. Like, they did this right. They did I don't know if they'll do the movie right, but as far as the trailer, they did it right.
Okay, so you like the trailer.
Yes.
Because here's my question. What the hell is this movie about?
The Earth is in danger and they need all these creatures. Yeah, I don't know.
But didn't it make it seem as though the creatures are what's going to destroy people? They were saying people are the virus and then the Earth is going to, fight its fever. And that's what the Titans are.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't releasing them kill people?
Well, and I wonder, too, is she like a doomsday?
That's what I'm thinking.
This is what she wants.
Right.
Maybe it's some group that decides that,
people got to go.
And then the military comes in. That's what I think could be happening. The way it cuts together, it makes it sound like she's part of the military. Maybe the military's like, okay, we got to find these things first before she does and something like that. Or before her group. Maybe. I don't know.
In the first movie, Godzilla fought off the other creatures and saved the world.
Right.
And then just went back into the ocean, was like, peace. And then is it supposed to be that all of these other ones get released? And then it's like Godzilla versus like three or four or five. It's like, is he like the one you're cheering for in this Royal Rumble?
Well, you can't have King Ghidorah as a good guy in any way. I'm sorry. So if they do that, then they lost me.
But you know what I mean? Like, is it if Godzilla loses to any one of them, Earth is destroyed? And he's got to defeat them all. Is that what the premise is here?
Yeah, pretty much. Or maybe he can, team up with a couple of the other ones to defeat the... Usually King Ghidorah is like the big bad.
Okay.
And so everyone has to get together. Like, Godzilla can't necessarily take him out on his own, so he has to get the help of Mothra and Rodan.
So we got to get Nick Fury in there to be like, Mothra, you're part of the Godzilla initiative.
Yeah, maybe. So, but no, I love the trailer. It got me kind of excited for to see this. I was a little worried when they were talking about bringing in all these other monsters, but from what I saw, it's like, all right, I'm kind of excited.
If in the movie, when Mothra is released, if there are two tiny singing women,
there better be.
Really?
You can't have Mothra without the Mothra song and the little twin fairies.
Okay. That was the part that just drove me crazy when I watched that movie.
Oh, my God. My favorite part.
Oh, jeez. Okay. We know where you stand.
Absolutely. Oh, well, so anything else come out? I think that was the bulk of it, wasn't it? Did we miss anything?
There was the second trailer. I don't know if it came out during the con, but it came out this weekend, was Bohemian Rhapsody. There was a second trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody. And I remember when we talked about it the first time, the concern that Sarah had and that I shared was, will this movie in any way discuss Freddie Mercury's bisexuality, if that's the appropriate way to describe it? And this second trailer confirmed that it will.
Okay.
They went right into it, and it even went even more of him just being like this musician of trying to say, like, we need to stand out, we need to take a risk. And everyone's just sort of like there's a part where they're recording Bohemian Rhapsody and one of them is just going like, Galileo, and he goes, again, Galileo, again, how many do you want?
So there you go. So it just goes to show that the producers have listened to the Time Shifters podcast.
Yes.
They heard you guys and
did some reshoots.
There's your answer.
Okay. But yeah, the trailer looked good. And there's even a part where one of them in the band is like, I want a song where they all can just sort of play along. He's like, well, what do you mean? And then he does the stomp, stomp, clap, stomp, stomp, clap. And it's like, this is great.
That's nice.
We're going to learn how some of these songs were made.
Yeah, that should be cool. It should be a real fun film to watch. Oh, the other trailer, no interest to you, but interest to me, the Doctor Who trailer. Mm. We finally got actual Doctor in action kind of stuff, the first female to play the role of the Doctor. So that was kind of a kind of exciting, not much in the trailer to really pull from. It's kind of like, okay, this is her. These are her companions.
Ta-da.
That's it. Okay. Moving on. That, you know, still got to wait. You know, my fingers are crossed like they always are.
Sure.
Every new season, I say the same thing. Just give me good stories. You know, the people that they've had in front of the camera have all been great mm-hmm. throughout this series, with few exceptions. I just want good stories.
Sure.
I think so many of them have been just phenomenal actors, and they've, you know, especially the leads, you know, who've played the doctors have been phenomenal actors, and I think they need better stories. And I'm hoping that they've got a new showrunner and everything, and they're going to kind of like leave a lot of the stuff in the past. In the past, they're not going to bring a lot of stuff forward. They're going to do he's going to do his thing, you know, at least for the first year. Fingers are crossed that he brings decent stories. That's all I want. Just give
that's
me
all any
stories.
Of us want.
But watching this damn show, it's been around for over 50 years. You know, they've had good stories in the past. Bring back the good stories.
The last bit of news that came out of Comic-Con was they had already announced that, you know, during the CWDC shows, you know, whenever they do their annual crossover.
Oh, right.
The next crossover will show Batwoman be part of it. Like, apparently she shows up and says, there's a problem, I need help. And it's just sort of like, who are you? I'm Batwoman. And the other thing that came out of the con was that they're working on her own series, and the character will be an out lesbian.
Interesting.
Which I think is great, because that's who the character is, and people were worried that during the crossover that they wouldn't address it. But if she's going to get her own show, and that's going to be part of it, addressed or not, it's going to be there so long as that show gets made.
So Batwoman. Huh?
Batwoman.
Not Batgirl.
This is, I believe it's Kate Kane. I think that's the character's name. Yeah, I've read a few issues with her. Interesting character.
Interesting.
Yep.
Is this not the Barbara Gordon?
No.
No, okay. Mm-mm. All right.
No, it's not Batgirl. It's Batwoman, separate character in like this black and red. And she has really like jet black hair, but when she's dressed as Batwoman, she wears this bright red wig that like matches the red on her, like her costume. And yeah, it's really cool looking.
Interesting. Okay.
You should look up some of the artwork. It's
not
great.
A character I know anything about. I've never heard of Batwoman. Interesting.
She was kind of like, they brought that, like that Batwoman was a character that existed many, many, many decades ago. And then they just stopped doing that, and they got into a whole bunch of other things. And then they decided to like bring her back as like, you know, this is our new version of Batwoman.
Interesting.
So yeah, I'm interested in that, especially since they are going to embrace that she is an out lesbian. I think that's important.
Yeah. Supergirl is definitely, you know, not shied away from the gay and lesbian, of lifestyle, yeah. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that they would take it. Just it's the next step, I guess. So yeah, I'm interested. I'm kind of interested too. I'm going to read up on this character too. I've never heard of her. So
okay,
the artwork you just showed me looks really awesome.
Yeah,
you know, like I would definitely read a book. And if they're going to make her look just like that, I'd definitely watch a series with her. That'd be awesome. All right, so that's the last news out of San Diego, as we record anyway. There still may be... It's going on right now. There may be a few more bombshells, so we shall see. So I guess with that, we'll take a short break here, play a promo for another podcast. When we get back, we're going to talk about the Netflix original, Arc.
Hey, comic book fans, I'm Joe Stuber, producer and host of Comic Book Central, where each and every week I welcome a legendary talent to the Comic Book Central lair to talk about bringing comic books to life.
Greetings, true believers. This is Stan Lee.
When do you think the Academy is going to wise up and create a special Oscar category for best cameo?
I don't know. They're just asleep on their feet. Maybe your show, maybe this interview will be the turning point.
Hi, this is Jamie Alexander, the Asgardian warrior Sif from Thor. I went to Marvel. They said, hey, sit down. We want to talk to you about this part. So what happened was I had a knife in my purse. I set the purse on the chair and it fell off and the knife fell out. And then they were like, oh, God, you really are Lady Sif.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one, the only, William Shatner. There's all these rumors out there that you're going to be in the next Star Trek film.
Would I like to be in it? You know, I don't want to be a gratuitous character.
Like scrubbing the windows on the Enterprise or something?
There's a guy on the wing.
Chris Pine! There's a guy on the wing!
Chris Pine says there's a guy on the wing.
Catch the very latest episodes at the website, comicbookcentral.net. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, like it on Facebook, follow it on Twitter, and be sure to join me each and every week for Comic Book Central.
This is John Rhys Davis.
Hi, everyone. This is Summer Glau.
Hi, this is Trisha Helfer, number 6 from Battlestar Galactica.
Hey, this is Dean Cain, Superman from Lois and Clark, and you're listening to Comic Book Central,
where comic books come to life.
Excelsior.
And we're back. Yeah, Netflix original ARQ, ARC, was a film that you suggested.
Yes.
Being a time travel fan, it's no wonder.
Yeah, time travel, I almost don't care what the movie's about. I'm going to watch. It's, you know, it's what Godzilla is to you. You'll watch it at least once, won't you?
Yes, I will.
That's if it's exactly. bad, it's like, fine, that was a bad one. I won't watch it again. But if you tell me there's any kind of time travel or, like, sending messages back and forth through time, like, I even watched that terrible movie, The Lake House, because they could send mail 2 years back and forth. I heard that. I was like, really? And then I watched it. It's like, oh, this was just, like, a dumb fantasy romance movie.
But I watched it
because of that. I can't help myself.
Now, this was fun. This was written, directed by Tony Elliott. It starred Robbie Amell and Rachel Taylor.
Yes.
Also had a few, Sean Benson, Gray Powell, Jacob Nahum. And then there's an Adam Butcher.
Yes.
All kind of more minor characters or whatever. Yes. But the two stars there, Robbie and Rachel. And the director and writer, brilliant. Trio of people there. They did a fantastic job. I really enjoyed this film. I mean, I found myself with kind of predicting maybe slightly ahead of the story what was going to happen. There's a couple character traits.
You're a bad guy.
I know what's going to happen next kind of thing. But it was an enjoyable film. I found myself sitting there like, okay, it's an hour and a half, get there. And then I paused to go use the restroom or something. Like, oh, I'm 45 minutes in already.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive when it's essentially a film that you're watching over and over.
Yes.
You know, the same sequence effectively over and over.
That Groundhog Day kind of story.
Minor differences. Yeah, exactly. And so, it clicks really well.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but Tony Elliott was also one of the writers on Orphan Black, which I know is a show you're really into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I did not notice that. I didn't see that. I even clicked on his name to see what he did, and I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, while he was working on that show is when he kind of went to work on this.
Nice. Yeah, you know, Orphan Black was a series I absolutely loved. So, excellent. I'll have to see how many episodes he wrote and which ones.
I don't know which ones, but quite a few from what I understand.
Oh, excellent.
He was one of like the bigger writers on that show.
Then he's definitely a very talented writer.
Other things that impressed me about the movie, filmed it in 19 days.
Oh, very impressive.
Yes. And done on a budget of less than $2 million.
Nice.
Yeah. And I always love that. That's the reason I want you to watch this. Those like low budget indie sci-fi movies. What haven't we loved from that? You know, you have to do so much more when you have so much less. You have to get more creative. You have to really like stop and think, you know, how to get the most out of your budget when you've got no budget. And
right.
So it showed in this. Like, it looked good. The set was great.
Yeah.
The soundtrack was, you know, really nice. And then for me, this was my second time watching, and I just started noticing brand new things. And I was like, oh, wow, that's great. Because knowing what you know of, like, who's really where they stand and seeing it for the second time, you notice those things even greater. Like there's a part where I think it's like on the third, because the concept is, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen it, go watch it right now. Stop what you're doing.
It's on Netflix.
Go watch it. It's this like, you know, set in the future, dystopian society. The world's been like ravaged by war.
That was one of the first things that I really liked is it just sets you in this world.
Yes.
No explanation, no backstory, nothing.
No.
It's like, this is the world. You're going to learn about it. As they talk, just as sidebars.
Yes.
Oh, but we don't have any breather masks. Okay, the air is bad.
You know? Yes.
It's just little bits like that. I really like that.
Nobody has apples anymore. Like,
yeah,
things
exactly.
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Food's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, like there's no like text in the beginning, like in the year 2243.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no voiceover. Like you could see so many other people who write, like Robbie Amell gives you a voiceover and then things like that. Doesn't happen.
Nope.
Yeah. And in the conversations are very, they're very natural. It's not just sort of like, oh, Hannah, who I've known from such and such.
Right.
None of that happens. Yeah. You learn them.
You learn about the
very naturally.
You learn about this Taurus organization. You learn about the Block, which is like a rebellion.
Yes.
Apparently Taurus now rules the world, and you find all this out just through conversation.
Right.
Very natural. Love that.
It came up when it needed to come up. There were the exposition was not there.
Exactly.
That's one of the best parts about this movie, and so. Robbie Amell's character, Ren, is, you know, reunited with this woman that he loves. She got, you know, they both got abducted by Taurus. He got away. She didn't. You don't know how much time went by, but clearly it had been years.
Well, years, but she spent like 6 months in rehab, 5 or 6 months in like their rehabilitation
torture
camp. Yeah, exactly.
But
no telling how long ago that actually was.
Right. So... you know, they finally found each other again, and he has this arc, a perpetual motion machine that is, you know, it that the energy cells power the machine, and the machine repowers the cells, and nobody thinks it can work. But it turns out that it malfunctioned, and whenever the power runs out, it just resets itself, which resets time.
So they're living like
a 3.5 hour loop over and over again, and Ren is the only one who can remember it.
At first.
That's the part, like, you're half hour in, and you're just sort of like, okay, it's Groundhog Day, and because the first day he dies within, like, 3 minutes, which is great. Like, he falls, like, he's getting dragged on the floor, he pulls the wall, he runs, he gets knocked over, falls down the stairs, dead, wakes up. It's like, that day didn't last long at all. Day two, he's about to pull the wall, and he's like, no. Because he's not sure if he dreamed the other thing, and then... He gets a little bit further into it, and then he gets shot, and then he wakes up, and then he realizes, this isn't a dream, I'm in a time loop. And then it's on the fourth day where Hannah starts to remember, and that was the part where I first watched it, where I went, they've just turned this whole story on its head. Now other characters are slowly starting to remember the day, and that's what changes everything.
And I love that one of the, effectively, the bad guys, they realize that he's aware of the time loop because what happened before didn't happen. So like, why isn't he here? He knows.
He knows. Yes, exactly.
Like, oh, nice.
Yes. And they keep throwing in all of these things. And so the movie keeps changing in its tone. It starts as this like dystopian sci-fi with a Groundhog Day kind of thing. But then when you start to learn more about Hannah, it becomes like this conspiracy, you know, thing, and you're learning more about Taurus and the Block. But then as the bad guys start to realize what's going on and they start to remember the loop, it becomes this fight for the future story. Like, where the movie starts and where the movie ends are very different.
There was, I don't know, do you want to get into kind of any spoilers here?
Let's go for it.
All right. There's some things I want to talk about, and I'll admit these are some of the things that sort of like where it sort of falls down maybe a little bit.
Okay.
At one point, one of the bad guys who we find out to be a mercenary who's working for Taurus, who, you know, infiltrated the Block, but now he's, you know, working for Taurus. The whole premise starts out by saying one of the guys gets electrocuted on this arc because it's rigged with like 20,000 volts or something like that as a security thing or something. And that shorts it, and that's what starts the loop. Well, at one point, another one of the guys stops him from electrocuting himself. So we were wrong about what started the loop, or that doesn't work.
It could be. I think it's because the arc itself is not being affected by the loop. I think that's what it is. So when it shorted that first time, it still has been shorted. So he can electrocute himself or not electrocute himself. It's kind of immune to the loop because it is the loop, is kind of how I interpreted that. The part that the plot hole that I can't get past is they establish that the loop is only like a really small
confined
right
in the just, house and just outside the house. In the yard,
that's
right.
It. And that leads me to think like, well, and they've been looping, they discover, because they get to the ninth loop and they realize they've looped nine times, thousands of times.
Yes.
And there's a loop within the loop. There's like these smaller nine loops. And then when you come back to a tenth loop, everything's restarted because the energy kind of almost reaches like a critical mass. And so it just starts everything over and right. Everyone forgets again.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that thousands of times. But if the loop is not going past that circle you see, mm-hmm. when Sonny calls in for help, shouldn't the other guy be like, you've done this a lot. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is like the 200th time you've called us.
that doesn't work. And I would have liked to have in some way established that, okay, you know, the 100-yard radius or whatever is what's looping. I would like there would have been some way for us to see on the other side of that the world is maybe it's gone. Maybe that being in this loop is the only way that you can survive.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the world has now been completely annihilated.
Right. Years have gone by.
Yeah, exactly. There was talk. You see a little clip of a news program that someone's watching, and they're talking about something happened in Australia, and that mm-hmm. now no one will be able to step on the radiated ground. So there's nuclear, you know, war going on somewhere. So I think that would have been kind of a neat twist on everything, where everyone's fighting each other throughout the entire movie, and then in the end find out that
there's nothing else,
there's nothing to fight for. They could be the only survivors because they're in this loop.
Yeah,
like that would have been neat.
That would have been neat. Yeah, because it makes you wonder, like, if you step out, can you step back in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is it like a bubble? Yeah.
They see beyond.
And it looks the same.
And it looks the same, but you wonder if that is perception because you're inside that loop.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the one thing I would have cleaned up. That would have been what you said would have been a really great little twist of like you step out and you see like, oh, look at that. Everything's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And to all of them, even the bad guys are just sort of like, well, I guess we'll all just live here forever.
Yeah. You know,
stuck in a 3-hour loop over and over again. But if you can get past that...
Mm-hmm.
It's still a really good, enjoyable movie.
Oh, it is enjoyable. Oh, absolutely. And it's just one of those things that's, again, like a lot of movies, unfortunately, that you kind of fun of. Out on the surface are great, but yeah, you just kind of scratch the veneer a little bit, and you're like, oh, darn, kind of wish I hadn't done that. I was really, it's just the, when they determined that it was just this finite area.
Mm-hmm. They didn't need to do that, too.
Yeah, that to me just like, then there's something bigger here. And
There's not.
Right. And like, oh, all right.
Yeah, because it's just showing that.
It hurts because like the radio thing hurts. So, yeah, they would have been hearing this thing 1,000 times from this guy. Wouldn't they have maybe set up a perimeter and tried to figure out what's going on inside this bubble of time?
Or, right.
Yeah, nothing. None of the.
Yeah.
You don't see anything from the outside.
No, and I almost wonder if. They set up that whole perimeter just to say, like, well, you know, it's not affecting the whole world. We want to make this a bit realistic, but then it doesn't go anywhere. So you didn't need to set it up. We would have been fine with world that keeps resetting every 3.5 hours.
Yeah, or just left it. Is it the world? Is it just them?
Who cares?
Don't know.
Yeah,
it didn't
ambiguous.
Matter. It didn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
So they established something that hurt them by establishing.
Mm-hmm.
Another little fun fact about the cast, Robbie Amell is the younger cousin to Arrow's Stephen Amell.
Oh, okay. I thought the last name sounded familiar,
uh-huh.
but then I couldn't find anything with Robbie Amell. I didn't see anything in his filmography that really jumped out.
He was the first version of Firestorm on the CW, on The Flash. He got established as Ronnie Raymond, so he was in the first and second season of The Flash a little bit as the first version of Firestorm. He got killed off in the first episode. He showed back up a couple of times, you know, it was like, you know, an alternate world evil version, things like that. But yeah, he's the younger cousin of Stephen Amell, and they look a lot alike. Like, it's this strong family genes.
Yeah, I thought he looked a little familiar, so that's probably why. So.
Yeah, at profile, they look exactly the same. Yeah. They've done a lot of interviews together, and they're like two goofballs. But yeah, I think he's a very talented actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hannah, played by Rachel Taylor, she plays Trish on Jessica Jones.
Okay, never watched it.
So. Oh, okay, she's great on that show, too. I think she's a phenomenal actress. I thought she was the strongest one in this cast.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the scene where she first realizes the loop's going on, and there's that whole, like, silent moment that's just focused on her face.
She's trying to piece it together in her
but
head.
But that acting that she's doing, that, like, it's one half I'm terrified and one half I'm trying to wrap my mind around this,
mm-hmm.
it's just all with her face, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually really good. A film like this, where it does the groundhog thing, it could get boring really quick.
Yep.
They're really good at just twigging each loop just enough to keep it interesting and to just keep feeding you that little bit of information throughout the film about the world that we're in and the situation that's going on, who these people are, who any of the people are, whether they're on one side or the other. And, you know, the arc, and I mean, no one knows what the arc is, that the arc is doing this until they figure it out, you know, fifth loop in, mm-hmm. like, it's because of this thing. And I like that too. I mean, I just really like how they kind of just spoon fed the information just enough with each loop by just changing each loop a little bit. So more of that information can come out.
Right.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Groundhog Day is great, and so many people have done it, but they're essentially just doing Groundhog Day. And like you said, yeah, because everyone else starts to learn, the day, each day becomes more dangerous than the last.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, we know we have that safety of looping again, but we're trying to get out of this alive.
Right. Yeah, and it's everyone actually acts really smart about it, too, because it's like, okay, well, we'll shut it down, we'll stop. He's like, not until we're in control, because we know this guy's out here and he's bad. He's going to kill us.
Right.
So we need to take care of him before we can shut down and stop the loop. I'm like, wow, that's someone's actually thinking.
Yes, exactly. Or there's that part where they shut it down and then it's like, oh, Sonny turned it back on because he wasn't sure he was going to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's what creates the error to make the big loop.
Right.
And I like, because these were things I caught on the second watch of that, you know, there's a part where Ren is explaining to Hannah for the first time, like, there's a loop going on, and she doesn't remember yet. And then she even goes, what else do you remember? Because that's her knowing full well that she's lying to him and she doesn't know what he knows yet.
Oh,
she believes him that there's a loop going on, but she doesn't know how much she's supposed to trust him right now. And I thought that was great because there's no reason to catch that the first time. But yeah, she even just goes like, what else do you remember? Like, oh crap, is my cover blown? Which is great.
And I like in the it plays in too that it is this 3 hours. So he may get shot and killed at like hour one. 2 hours still go by.
For everyone else.
And that actually plays in, okay, after I die, what happened?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was
well,
great.
I don't know. There's this and that. We were talking. A gun went off, and then I woke up. Oh, Sonny killed you.
Yeah.
Must have killed you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I like that.
Yes.
So it's not exactly like the sort of, well, I guess Groundhog Day, like he would go to like midnight, and it would start over or whatever. So this would like, didn't matter who or when got killed when.
The day kept going.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that was neat. And that actually plays into, again, furthering the story. Like, just absolutely, if nothing else, just the writing alone just impressed me in this film.
And then there was the other part where, like, Sonny hasn't fully remembered the loop, but there's a part where they're like, where is he? Oh, he's got to still be in the house. How do you know? It's a hunch. He's starting to remember, but he doesn't know for sure. And it's just like that. I love how, like, remembering comes slowly. Like, nobody remembers all at once. They just sort of like,
I just had, like, this deja vu
exactly.
of getting shot. You know, or
right.
Something. Yeah.
It's so
I think
clever.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Like, you kind of remember and then you fully remember.
Yeah. Or even Hannah, where she was like, I remember once, but it feels like it should be
more.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then I really got, like, I love the ending of this movie of like, you know, everything start, you because you see the video that they've watched, like, I don't remember recording this. Did we never did this. I don't remember this loop. And they realize it's been thousands of times. And then you see how Ren is covered in blood and the screen has a crack on it. And then you see him get the blood on himself.
Mm-hmm.
You see the screen get shot. And you're sort of like, it's happening. This is like, we're about to see the last loop and we're going to figure out. Like, I kept getting real, even on the second watch, got really excited for that part.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in so the film just ends without an ending.
Yeah. Well, it ends with Hannah waking up.
Yeah, that was interesting. She wakes up first before Ren.
Does she remember? Mm-hmm. Like, or is she waking up thinking it was all a dream, or is she going to wake up and be like, I don't know why I'm mad. Like, I don't know why I'm, you know, startled.
Right.
You know, I love that ambiguous kind of
ending. Yeah, because in all the other loops, it's Ren always wakes up first
right.
before Hannah. You know, right. In the very end, Hannah's the one that starts awake. So, interesting.
The movie opens with him waking up startled,
mm-hmm.
and he has no idea what just happened. Is she waking up startled because of the last loop? Is she waking up startled because she remembers? Because clearly he woke up startled from the last loop but has no memory.
Right.
And, yeah, I just keep wondering, like, wow, I couldn't have had, like, two more minutes.
you could have a sequel and just have the same movie over.
I'd be down for it. Just different versions.
Twist it a little bit.
You could just five.
Keep going.
Yeah, just do it over and over again.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. I appreciate you suggesting it, and it was definitely worth the watch. And I guess we have spoiled some things here and everything, but I still recommend it because we can say how much we appreciate the writing and the acting, but I don't think we do it really justice. Definitely for the writing. It's just being able to do this and keep writing it and keep writing the same scenes and then just using it to tell your story, it was really impressive.
Yeah. So great, great experiment, you know, fun indie movie, great experiment mm-hmm. of doing more with less. And even with spoiling it, like, you should have stopped when I said stop and go watch it. But if you didn't, go watch it anyway. It's a great journey
Absolutely.
To be on.
Yeah. It's an hour and a half. You won't regret.
No.
And just put it on a loop. All right, well, I don't think we have anything else. I think we can pretty much close out the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, you know, any feedback or anything, timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. I guess that's going to be it. Until we talk to you next time, we'll say goodbye.